Hey everyone, welcome to Book Club. Today is day 26. So today's chapter is largely about unselfishness and how the different sexes tend to take this in different ways. He says here on the second page, a woman means by unselfishness, chiefly taking trouble for others. A man means not giving trouble to others. As a result, a woman who is quite far gone in the enemy's service will make a nuisance of herself on a larger scale than any man except those whom our father has dominated completely. And then he says, and conversely, a man will live long in the enemy's camp before he undertakes as much spontaneous work to please others as a quite ordinary woman may do every day. And so this is really, really interesting. So what he's basically saying is that unselfishness is, in a woman's eyes, just trying to take on as many problems for other people as you can. I think you see this in a lot of women, right? You kind of have this like Mary Martha debate of just like wanting to serve, wanting to do things, wanting to sacrifice on behalf of other people. And men largely mean like not imposing themselves on other people, not making themselves inconvenient, basically being independent, right? You can kind of think of this, I think the nurturing nature of women allows them to want to be nurturing and want to have other people dependent on them. Where men, being who they are, being leaders and workers, are desirous of not being dependent on other people. And so that's what both of them see as a virtue and see as the good that we should be striving for. And so what's interesting, I think, in the insight that he explains is he says that a woman who is deep in the enemy's camp, right? So that means that a Christian practicing woman is likely or prone to making herself quite the nuisance to other people because they don't mind imposing or, you know, all of that in other people. And you see this in a lot of family life, right? A lot of mothers, mother-in-laws, situations like that. Emily and I are both very blessed with our mother-in-laws, I think. But you see this often, right? Where there's kind of this, oh, I'm just going to impose. This is what I want. I'm going to, you know, make my kids feel guilty for not doing what I want them to do. They're willing to impose. Why? Because they've been so imposed upon, right? Because they always take from other people. When other people want to impose on them, they kind of expect that same thing on the opposite side. Where a man, our temptation, he says here, and this of course isn't 100% true for the genders, but a man's temptation, he says, even if we're Christian, even if we're practicing the faith, our temptation is actually leaning towards not doing other things for other people, right? Not spontaneously thinking about the needs of others, stepping in to do things. This is why I think it's so important to teach young men to do things like hold the door and look out for other people and be mindful of the needs of others, because that's what men don't want. They don't want to be inconvenienced by other people, where women, what Screwtape is saying, are more prone to inconveniencing others beyond what we might deem acceptable. And then he goes on to how you can basically start to ruin a relationship through this. He says on the next page, in discussing any joint action, it becomes obligatory that A should argue in favor of B's supposed wishes and against his own, while B does the opposite. It is often impossible to find out what either party really wishes. With luck, they end by doing something that neither wants, while each feels a glow of self-righteousness and harbors a secret claim to preferential treatment for the unselfishness shown, and a secret grudge against the other for the ease with which the sacrifice has been accepted. Now, the line that I really underlined here was, it is impossible to find out either party's real wishes. I grew up in a family that was very much like this, I think, where it was like this almost like self-righteous kind of like, oh no, we'll do what you want today. We can go eat wherever you want, or we can, you know, we're going to make these sacrifices. I'm going to make this sacrifice for you. That often was kind of held against you, right? That was kind of seen as a debt, if you will, and made the other person feel really good about themselves. And you have this, I think, in a lot of families. And I think this is especially common within the church and within groups, even friendships, right? But especially in marriages where you have two really nice people, not necessarily two really kind people, but two really nice people. When you have two people that really don't want to offend, they don't want to, you know, step on anybody's toes. They just want to avoid confrontation constantly. And obviously there can be goodness to some of that, but where niceness can go too far is when you get to this point. It is often impossible to find out either party's real wishes. And this is something that I've had to express, Emily and I work on this a lot. I think both just me being from the Northeast, where we're much more direct with each other, we're much more straightforward, and Emily kind of having more of that kind of Midwest nice attitude, if you will. And so because of that, I think a lot of times we'll have conversations, or I often will joke with her about asking Emily a question, and she'll answer some other question. She thinks I want answered. And I'm like, no, I just want you to tell me what, if I ask you, you know, do you want to do this? Answering with a question, I just want to know what you want to do, because I want to do what you want to do right now. And there's going to be other times where I say, hey, I don't feel like talking right now. I just want to watch this movie, or I just want to watch football. And then there's a lot of other times where I say, hey, I'm totally down to do whatever you want, and vice versa. And I want that. I want the directness from her. I want the directness from other family members, because one thing that, if there's something in this world that I hate, it's hidden grudges. It's things being swept under the rug. It's things being people kind of lying for the sake of niceness and all that kind of, I can't stand it. I'm not here for it. I think that it always causes more problems than it helps to solve, or that it helps to prevent. And so we are very, very big as a family on being direct and just being honest with each other, politely, kindly, but always, you know, avoiding this trap, avoiding the impossibility of finding out what either party really wants. I always want to know explicitly, what do you want me to do? What can I do today that would make you happy? And would you mind sitting and hearing a few things that you could do today that would make me very happy? I think this is part of the reason why, and you probably heard this if you listen to the podcast episode with Alessandro DeSanto, one of the co-founders of Halo and one of my best friends. We talked about how the only way you can really work with friends is if you have this candid approach to conversation, right? If you're giving feedback, you have to be painfully, painfully honest with each other on what you think, what you're feeling, what you're going through, etc. And so you have to be very honest. The same thing applies, I think, within marriage. And so let's see here. Did I have anything else? Yeah. Basically says, if each side had been frankly contending for its own real wish, it would have all kept within the bounds of reason and courtesy. But just because the contention is reversed and each side is fighting the other side's battle, all the bitterness which really flows from thwarted self-righteousness and obstinacy and the accumulated grudges of the last 10 years is concealed from them by the nominal or official unselfishness of what they are doing, or at least held to be excused by it. Each side is indeed quite alive to the cheap quality of the adversary's unselfishness and of the false position into which he is trying to force them. But each manages to feel blameless and ill-used itself with no more dishonesty than comes natural to a human. So I think this just kind of reiterates that, right? You see, I think that point there about the grudges from the last 10 years, when you're counting score, when you're keeping score, this is when I find myself most prone to do that. When I am just not expressing myself, not expressing my wants and needs within our relationship. Also true within friendships, right? If I don't express what I want, what I need, then I find myself starting to keep score or be more judgmental or whatever, because you just kind of want to have this continued upper hand on the other person, whether it's a friend or a spouse or whatever it might be. And so I think women, I think, are especially prone to the desiring a mind reader, right? And so I think I just saw a great Catholic woman talking about this yesterday on social media about the need to express to men they can't read your minds. There's something to want to be pursued and to want to be known and loved and to be pursued in that. But you also have to be realistic and understand that there's times you just say what you want. There's times that I think one of the worst things that happens in a marriage is for people to say, I don't want to say what I want. I want you to know what I want. That I think is just immature. I think it's childish. And we find the best results with people who are just honest and transparent and open about their desires, about the things that make them happy, as well as the things that don't make them happy. And asking the other person to do those things or to not do those things is very important. So I think that's it. That's it on transparency today. I know this is hard for a lot of people, again, who struggle with niceness and never wanting to upset the other person or whatever. But I think if you're in a loving relationship, if things are going as they should, the other person wants to make you happy. And so you shouldn't be afraid of expressing your needs or desires to them, because you're just helping them do their job, right? And my job isn't necessarily to make my wife happy, but my job is to make her holy, to help her get to heaven. And I think that it's a lot easier to be virtuous and holy when you are happy. And so I would say it's kind of wrapped up in a part of my ultimate mission and job within marriage and vice versa. And so you do those things, you know those things, you're just giving them hints. You know, I've heard a great Instagram reel recently that called them cheat codes, where families, married couples kind of give cheat codes to the other person. The wife says, I don't ever want to take out the trash. Husband says, I don't want to load the dishwasher, whatever it is. You know, I don't want dishes in the sink. You know, your kind of thing that you do or do not want to do or want the other person to do. and just how that's cheat codes to the happiness, to having a good marriage, to having a happy spouse, which everybody ultimately desires on their wedding day for sure. And then I think, you know, when marriages slowly fall apart, it's because of things like this. So let's be honest. All right. We'll see you tomorrow. God bless you.